Mississauga 960 AM presents The Spin, covering the human side of sports, music, and today's news from Mississauga, the GTA, and beyond. And now, please welcome your host, Barry Davis.
And Michelle Storino.
We have to find a way to get Matt, the producer, McFarland, to revoice that and put you on it. We need you to turn your mic on. Okay. Talk, Michelle?
Yeah.
Nope, not working. All right. Well, we are off to a fabulous start here on our Friday edition of The Spin. Barry Davis with the very quiet Michelle Storino. And coming up on this show, in hour number one, we are talking 80s. 80s music is coming up because we have not one but two iconic bands from the 80s. First of all, Diamond and Zero from the Kings, who are very famous for their huge hit back in 1979, Switching to Glide, The Beat Goes On. And then after that, we're going to be joined by Dale Martindale, who is the lead singer of Images in Vogue, who are still at it after all these years and actually are performing in a concert this weekend. In hour number two, no Jim Byers this week. He's actually in flight. He's going to be on an aeroplane, so we won't be talking to him, but we will be talking to Paul Bruno, and we're going to talk to him about our fantasy sports. Then, in hour number three, it is the official debut of Let's Talk Baseball. And we're going to get your questions as you are on your way to the Toronto Blue Jays game tonight. Or if you're home and you're about to watch the Blue Jays game tonight, write down this number, folks. Put it down and make sure that you call at 6:30. It is 416-640-0200, 416-640-0200. We're going to talk some baseball coming up at 6:30. Lots to come here over the next 3 hours. Barry Davis, Michelle Storino with you. Michelle's the quiet one, and this is The Spin on News Talk Saga 960.
Hey, Judy. Get Judy. You said to call up and I was feeling moody. Hey, little Donna, still wanna. I said to ring you up when I was in Toronto. I have lots of friends that I can gig at any time. Could mobilize some laughs with just one call. Like a bunch of lunatics, we'll act till way past dawn. Two will be rocking till our strength is gone. Yeah, this beat goes on. And on, and on, and on. Hey, lady. Ooh, you crazy. Well, me and Zero request you. And then we'll ride.
Yeah, the King switching to Glide. The Beat Goes On on Newstalk Saga 960. And we actually are joined.
I love that song.
By Diamond and Zero.
I love it.
From the Kings. You got to get a little closer to the microphone.
All right, I can do that.
Okay, I got to ask you this. I mean, this song, it goes back to, what, 1979, 1980, okay? And you've probably played it a gazillion times because you're most well-known for this song. And yet here we are, 30-some-odd years, maybe 40-some-odd years later, and you're still bopping to the song. Like, what is it about this song?
I love this song. I love Switching the Glide. Nothing matters but the weekend from a Tuesday point of view, Mr. Zero says.
Now, Zero, were you the one who came up with these lyrics?
Yeah, back at that time, yes, indeed. People often ask us about the segue itself and the two different songs. We wrote them separately, and it just seemed like we should have we should put them together because my mic is apparently
switch over to this one here.
This
yeah,
one, for sure. There you go.
Yeah. Anyway,
hey, there he is.
Hi,
Zero.
Everybody.
Hey, Kitty.
We have a little technical issues here, but we've resolved them now. And but yeah, we wrote the two songs separately, and then neither of them seemed to be a complete thing, so we put them together, and that's what made the segue.
Because I was always wondering what inspired you for the segue. Because when I think back, the first time I could ever remember a segue song was Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band into With a Little Help from My Friends, and that worked out really well. And you don't hear one without the other.
No.
We Will Rock You, We Are the Champions,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Was that in your mind at all when you decided to put the two together and say, well, you know, it has worked before in the past, so maybe we can do it again?
Well, I came up with a riff for This Beat Goes On, and the song Zero had all the lyrics written, and it was great. Everything was fine. And one summer day early in the summer, I was outside playing guitar, doing a da-da-down, da-da-down, like this. And Zero called me, and he said, I got this great idea, Switching to Glide. And so I'm going, da-da-dun, 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 switch into Glide. It just fell into place so perfectly. And then we thought, well, this beat goes on, the song, on and on and on and on and on. Then it goes, da-da-dun, da-da-dun. And it just clicked.
Well, they blend so well together,
right? It just clicked. It's God-given. I don't know where it came from, but it just happened like that. I said, Zero, look at this, listen to this. And then away he goes with his fantastic lyrics. And the rest is history. Yeah.
And one of the lyrics is, it says, me and Zero request you in the Mercedes.
Yeah.
Did that actually happen?
Well, I had a couple old beat-up Mercedes at the time. One died, and then we were going to a gig, and there was this other beat-up one in a gas station parking lot. I think it was $600, and it was a 1964 220S. Mercedes, so a big four-door, but that was the one the song is about.
Yeah.
Does Donna really exist?
Every Donna in the world that's heard this song is exists.
They think it
there.
Could be her, huh?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
But there really was no...
It rhymed with Juana.
And Tirana.
In Tirana, right.
And
you
Tirana.
Didn't. But when you wrote the lyrics, did you actually write Tirana?
No, we never have. You know, it's always been written out with Toronto, but nobody from here ever says Toronto. They say
right.
Tirana.
Right. Right. So, coming from two guys who aren't from Tirana.
I was born in Toronto.
Okay.
He was born in Oakville. But,
yeah.
It's all good. In terms of how you guys, well, I don't know the backstory, how you guys met, how everything kind of came together.
We went to the same public school and the same high school.
In Oakville.
In
yeah.
Oakville, okay. Yeah. And is that school still around now? Are there plaques in your names?
Well,
or what?
No, not at all. Our public school is now a private boys' school. And OT, the Oakville Trafalgar High School, is still the high school in a different location.
Yeah, new building.
How many songs did you guys write as a band before this song came to you? Because it's never easy to make it in the music business. And you hope that at some point you write a song or a series of songs that click with people. But to have a song that was this iconic, and Canadian bands have been dying for years to get airplay in the States, and they'll have album after album after album that does so well in Canada, but they can't get a sniff in the States. And you guys, it was almost kind of the opposite thing where you didn't have album after album, but you had that one song that just blew up.
Well, we were signed in the States to a major label in Los Angeles, so I think that was the key. And they released Switchin' to Glide on its own, but we were pushing them to put the Segway out, both songs. And when they finally did, that's when the phones started ringing across the U.S. at all the major market radio stations.
Did you know that the song was actually for the Milwaukee Brewers postgame show? Did you know that it was featured on their postgame show?
No, it's been played at lots of football, baseball, major league sports arenas for decades.
And
now,
have you been in attendance when it's on and you're like, yes?
Well, we actually, one of the guy from the Sabres.
Rick Jenneret, or like, is
he? The head of promotion for them or whatever. He took us down to a game, I don't know, about 6 or 7 years ago, I guess. And
they're promoting Tim Hortons, and they were dropping little empty winner cups, like they roll up the rim. Everyone was a winner.
Oh, really?
And they played Switchin' the Glide while we were there. It was pretty terrific.
Nice.
But one time I was watching the playoffs at the Detroit Red Wings a few years ago in hockey, and all of a sudden there's This Beat, Switchin' the Glide. They went to commercial, came back, the song is still on right near the end.
It is long. It's a little long in case you notice that.
I
asked you this, Zero, when we were chatting on the phone prior to doing this, and I asked you if it was a blessing or a curse to have this song, and you said it's a blessing. But were there ever times where you went, damn, I mean, this is not the only song we wrote. This is not the only song we're proud of. We've got an entire album worth of songs. We've got a lot of good music out there. Why is it that no one else is picking up on this other stuff?
Well, you know, we've always thought it was a great thing to happen. You know, we've been in this business long enough to know that it's, you know, very fortunate to hit once, let alone more than once. And so it's always been a blessing to us. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, we do have a lot of songs that we're quite proud of. And some of the older songs we've been playing for a long, long time. We wrote them way back in the early days when our band was called Whistle King. But we used to write 10 minutes. We used to write these giant long songs, the epic tunes. And then we realized, well, maybe we should write some shorter ones, and just some poppy songs. But then this happened, this Segway idea happened, and then that's what hit. Who would have thought?
Are you guys okay with the term one-hit wonder?
Well, that's just part of the music business, you know.
Actually two, if you call it a segue, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Because if you had released them separately, you may have had two huge hits.
Well, there's another old line that, you know, let's do a medley of our hit. And except ours is a medley, so we get to do that. But, you know.
Right. How was the reaction when you guys would do live concerts back then? And obviously people are waiting to hear This Beat Goes On, Switchin' to Glide. But as you were performing other songs, were you guys getting good reaction from it to the point where you're thinking, well, they like our stuff, so hopefully they're going to be buying the album, not just the single?
Well, our first album, The Kings Are Here, we heard from a lot of fans, a lot of people, that it was a great party album. They would put the album on, put it on, drop the needle at the beginning of the album, when the first half ran up, flip it over. So when we played our opening up for Jeff Beck or Eric Clapton or the Beach Boys, one, any of those, a lot of people knew the whole album. We'd play the whole album as our set, and every song went over great because it was such a party album, you know, ending up with Switchin' to Glide. So we were quite happy about all that.
And as far as how many songs we had in the can before we wrote that one, well, a lot, because we were together for a few years working on original material and writing and rehearsing and doing gigs, so that when opportunity came knocking, we were ready to go. And we'd been in the studio many times as well, so, you know, we were able to just keep going. But I would say we had at least 20, 30 songs written and recorded or demoed, something like that, before that. So, and that was part of this album that we were working on, and that's pretty much tune for tune the album that it turned out to be.
You mentioned just some of the pretty big names that you guys were opening for and affiliated with. What was that like, and was there someone there that, you know, you met in over the years that you were like, wow, I can't believe I just opened up for so-and-so?
Well, when we opened up for Eric Clapton after the show, He came and tapped Dave on the shoulder and said, great singing, man.
Yeah, he said, that would be great. He said, you're a great singer. I went, woo.
That's got to be a pretty cool.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Holy.
He didn't tell me I was a good guitar player. I'll tell you that right now. So.
That's right.
I actually remember seeing you guys at the Ontario Place Forum round.
Right.
And I don't, do you recall? You probably played there more than once, right?
No, I think we just did it a couple times that weekend, but with Glass Tiger.
That was what it was, yeah. Yes, because Glass Tiger played there, I think, once a week. I think they had residency at the Ontario Place Forum. But, you know, it was a great time in the 80s, and I think, you know, the 90s kind of ended rock and roll for quite a while, and now it's back, and now people are listening to this stuff again, and people like myself who are in our 50s are trying to relive our youth, and that's why it's so cool that you guys are back making new music. And of course, we played Switching to Glide off the top of the show, but we've got to hear something new because you've done it again. Why did you write another Segway song?
That's a very good question. We did it because of the success of the first one.
Hey, why mess with success, right?
And it just turned out to go like that. When you're doing it, you don't know that it's going to be like that. And it maybe they don't stand on their own. It's sort of, is this complete, or should it have something else to it?
Or does it fold into another song that we have? And that's exactly what happened with the Circle of Friends, Man That I Am, that we just released.
And people are saying a lot of these days, you know, we've heard it, you know, during this process a lot from that, you know, rock music is dead, rock radio is not doing well. But we feel that people are starved for good rock music.
Of course they are.
You know, people love to rock.
Yeah,
that's all there is to it.
Like to clap their hands and dance and have a great time, and without all the big techno stuff, which is doing very well, obviously. But yeah, no, somebody with their hands on an instrument that can actually play and sing right there in front of you.
But are you guys taking advantage of the modern technology now?
Never.
Digital? You're not recording analog.
No.
Okay.
You can't afford it, but actually... People do, but it costs so much more to record two-inch tape now.
Yeah, so stick with the digital.
Yeah.
Is there going to be a full album coming out?
We're hoping to do that. We have a few more beds that we have recorded, and we're starting to do the overdubs on them now.
Nice. So, okay, well, let's hear this brand-new single from the Kings. What is it called?
Circle of Friends, Man That I Am.
All right, let's hear it live right now here on Saga News Talk 960. Are you guys ready to perform it?
No, you're playing it on the...
Oh, I thought you guys were going to play
it
for us.
We're going to do something different. We're going to throw a wrench into it all.
Oh.
We're going to play another song.
Okay, why don't you play another song, and then I'll play Circle of Friends as we go out.
The new one is too complicated to play.
Oh, okay, so what song are you going to play for us?
This one is called Should Have Been Me, and it's a track that we've been playing live for a while that we're going to maybe put out very soon.
Okay, cool. Let's hear it.
See how this goes. I don't want to blow the mic up. Caught in the dark, in the hall by the door. Caught by the spark of a camera. Some natives think photographs steal your soul. And I wonder what they're after. Should have been me. Should have been me and you. Should have been me and you. Should have been me. Should have been me and you. And I'm falling all over. So much to say, so little time. Well, it's just minutes to midnight. Some people start a new year every day. It's almost daylight. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Should have been me. Should have been me and you. Should have been me. Take your time, I take my time. Soon our time is gone.
Awesome, guys.
Nice.
Very impressive. I gotta tell you, Diamond, your pipes are like 1980 still. How have you done this?
I don't know.
Cigarettes.
Quit smoking, everybody. Everybody quit smoking, okay?
Well, listen, because we are in the social media era of the world, if people want to follow you guys or figure out where you're playing and stuff, where can they hook up?
All our things are under the
We got technical problems here.
We're technically
moving the place up.
Yeah,
sorry.
So it's everything is The Kings Are Here. Our website, our Facebook page, everything. The name of the first album is The Kings Are Here, so that's why we use that.
Also, the fact that if you just Google The Kings, you get a million different things.
Yeah, so you always Google Switch into Glide. That's what that's what I do.
So you did a lot of singing at a young age. Was there a point in your life where, you know, maybe against the wishes of the family, you decided that music was the route you wanted to pursue as a career?
No, my family was never against it. They were always very supportive with it. But, you know, I always thought I was going to go to art school and become an artist, basically a painter of some sort. And Gary from the band called me up in the early 80s and said they were looking for a singer. They saw me at a nightclub. They just liked the way I looked. And so I went and auditioned for that. And one thing led to another. I thought, you know, it was summertime and they were saying they were going to maybe go on tour with backing up Japan. And I thought, well, that'd be pretty cool. You know, I make some money for school. So, you know, I thought rock stars, they make a lot of money. So that'd be good.
Yeah.
Just little easier. Did I know.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
20 years later, I'm still looking for the fortune. But it's all been good.
What I thought was one of the really cool things about Images in Vogue was, I mean, first of all, the name really suits what you guys were all about, right? Because, I mean, the music was a huge part of it, but the band's image was also a pretty big part of what you guys were doing back then, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. And it was very much of who we were at that time. It's not like we had anyone, like all our stage clothes and all that stuff was all designed and bought by us. And, you know, I'd have like local dressmaker, people that were in designing clothes, pants, shirts or whatever to make me something up. And, you know, I picked the material and sort of basically tell them what I wanted. And that's where we, you know, sort of got our image. And, you know, we're all inspired by the movement, by the new wave movement or whatever that was, and punk rock. And a lot of us were like into punk rock first before we, you know, got into the other more roxy music type music or
yeah
whatever.
You know, I think back to David Bowie, and you know, of course he had all those different personas that he had on stage. Yeah. Right. The Thin White Duke and all, and I remember him saying that was just, you know, again, there was offstage David Bowie, and then there was the onstage. When you were on stage, were you almost taking over by this onstage version of you?
You put on a costume, and it gets you into the mood of, or into the character of, you know, being able to get up there on stage and in front of people and do that. So yeah, the clothes do help. Like even still, like, you know, once I slip on my stage boots, they're, you know, they're like magic shoes. And it really is a thing mentally, you know.
Oh, it's funny because I had a chance to see you guys play a couple times at Classic Bowl. And, you know, if I were to, you know, run into you on the street, I would have, and I'm sure most people would have no idea that you are who this guy was back in the 80s with the hair. Do you kind of like that, being kind of more anonymous now than you would have been back in the 80s?
Yeah, you know. Not that I have a problem with, you know, people recognizing me and stuff, but yeah, it's nice to just be anonymous.
I want to get into where you guys went musically with the band, because as you mentioned, it was the early 80s. The punk scene was absolutely huge. And, you know, we're talking a bass guitar, drum, singer, and a lot of, you know, screaming and bouncing and really aggressive music. And now you hook up with a guitarist and a bunch of synth players. And this was well before we had the internet. And I don't know if Apple had a computer out then. If so, it was probably a very early one.
No, not when we started. There was no computers when we started.
Well, first of all, what was the thinking behind going into using computers and synths and making music? That, 'cause when you strip it all down, right, Dale, I mean, good music is good music. Whether you guys recorded those songs as a rock band.
You got to be able to play it on acoustic guitar first.
Yes,
you know?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So what you do with the song is all subjective, and it's all up to how you guys want to do it. But what went into that?
Well, we'd wrote everything full band rehearsal, like everyone's there and everyone's just, you know, we start off with the drum beat and someone will put in a keyboard part, or we'll start out with the synth sequence and go from there, or lyrics or whatever. But it was a group effort, and so we never wrote on acoustic guitar or anything like that. We wrote like with the keyboards, and you know, that's the way we started from scratch with keyboards. great.
Yeah, but see, I'm not a huge computer geek guy. I mean, I know how to use a computer, but when I watch the guys that you had and what they were able to do, so is the song get built and then you bring it to the computer guys and say, you know, the synth guys and say, okay, what can you do to this? Or how does that all get put together?
Well, Joe has a lot to do with it, especially back in the early days. Like I said, there were no, you know, keyboards and even like loops and stuff. It was all tape and stuff. It was very primitive, some of these keyboards. Like, I remember Joe before shows, he used to have to, we had this sequencer. It was basically two tapes, like a cassette tape almost in a machine, and he'd have to rewind it and fiddle with it. It was pretty primitive, really. But yeah, so the technical end is a lot of that's Joe.
You know, I'm a huge Beatles fan, and I think about what they were doing, you know, in 66 with Revolver and the tape loops and the experimental stuff. I almost get the feeling if they were still around in the 80s, this may have been something that really intrigued them, right? Because it was a matter of using the studio and using some of these other extra things as, you know, part of the band, right?
Yeah. Well, they used tons of keyboards. There's like from the 60s on, you know, from 66 on, they always used a lot of keyboards.
Yeah, I mean, they
harpsichords, synths, yeah.
And they were the first rock band to actually use a Moog, right? So were you guys all taking different influences from bands that you grew up listening to?
Oh, sure, yeah. Of course, we're all influenced by the Beatles. And
who isn't, right?
Exactly. And then, you know, and all the bands coming out of England at that time were a big influence, like Depeche Mode, Duran Duran, Japan, you know, all those bands. They all basically started at the same time we did.
We're in Canada.
In Canada at that time, there was basically us and the Spoons and Men Without Hats, and that was pretty much it for keyboard.
Yeah, and yet each band had its own unique, distinct sound, right? Which is, I think, what allowed all three of the bands to have the success, because you weren't all doing the exact same thing.
We weren't doing the same thing, yeah. Yeah.
Now, you start writing songs, you start putting together albums. In your wildest dreams, did you ever expect these singles, one after the other, to take off the way they did? And, you know, you win the CASBY Award in 86 for Single of the Year, you know, Group of the Year, all that stuff. I mean, obviously you have to have confidence and think we're going to do well, but did it exceed what you thought?
Honestly, it didn't really meet expectations over in the long run.
Really?
I find, yeah. Yeah.
Why do you say that? Was it more... Just
because, you know, I mean, like, we had a strong, like, Strangers on an album, and it went number one in New York, and one way or another, management and stuff didn't have it together enough to get us down there and stuff. And so, you know, there was a lot of lost opportunities and things like that. But I guess every band has those problems, but, you know, I think we were pretty well known in Canada, but in a few other places in the world, but. Yeah, I think with more exposure, we would have done a lot better than we ultimately did, because, you know, it's a pretty underground band, really, in a big way. But, yes, I mean, what we did was remarkable as well. I mean, you know, it's not a lot of bands that do that. It's not a lot of bands that get a song on the radio. I mean, there's no radio anymore, hardly, so I don't know how bands do it nowadays.
Yeah, and you know,
it's a wholly different business, but...
Well, yeah, it's crazy because, yes, they have social media where they can promote, but, man, oh, man, just to get their music played on the radio. And
yeah,
you know,
it's like winning the lottery. It's not an easy thing to do.
Yeah, and, you know, for me, it harkens back to those years of watching Much Music and how many Canadian bands really got the exposure that they probably wouldn't have received elsewhere simply because Much Music was able to do what it did in the day. I mean, how vital were they for you guys?
Oh, that was, Much Music was huge. I mean, we were lucky to be, in one way, like that band at that time, because, like I say, you know, there wasn't, if you're into keyboard bands and that whole thing, there was really not a lot else around in Canada. So that was, you know, that helped as far as we were concerned. But, Much Music was huge. I mean, We didn't have the internet, but we did have much music.
Yes, exactly. As the 80s started to wind down, you got late 80s. I mean, there were obviously changes in the band. And I guess one of the big ones was, you know, a member of your band, I don't know if you want to mention him or not, you know, and I always love some of these genre names.
Kevin?
Yeah, calling it, you know,
puppy.
Yeah, new romantic, which is a kind of a strange term for a type of music.
I don't like that.
You know, I mean, new wave I'm fine with, but for me.
Yeah, I don't mind new wave.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, geez, new romantic, which I find is very bizarre. But is that all true, what was documented, that he found that he didn't like the band sound, so decided to start up Skinny Puppy?
Yeah. That wasn't really his thing, I guess. He wanted a more edgier project. Yeah. It went well. Yeah, it went good for him. So I guess it was the right decision for him. But great drummer. I missed him, you know, not having him in the band.
Yeah, and you end up getting Derek Giles, who, you know, is a great guy. And
He's good. He's good.
Yeah,
known Luckily Derek. Luckily, we got him.
Yeah, known Derek for quite a while. And
yeah.
Tell me about what went into the thought of changing the name of the band to The Spell. Now, that ended up being the album name.
Yeah.
But why did you want to change the name, and why did you end up not?
Well, that was my idea. I've never been crazy about the name, Images in Vogue. I always thought it was a bit pretentious sounding, but it was probably a dumb idea at that point to try to change the name mid-career. But, you know, when you're young, you can do things.
You know it all, right? When you're young?
Yeah, this will work. Yeah, it was just me pushing for it. So we compromised, I guess. What was the reason behind that? I don't know. Maybe I thought the band would do better if we changed the name.
Sure.
That was like...
And you know what? Some people truly believe things happen for a reason, and you guys weren't able to use that name. So I think a lot of your hardcore fans are really glad.
I'm glad now we didn't.
Yeah.
Actually, in retrospect.
Yeah, and here you guys are now. We flash to 2019, and you guys are playing again. And was it kind of like a slow build-up, or was it one of those things? Because I know Ed Souza, who runs all those great classical things.
It's funny. It was a slow build-up, and it doesn't seem to be really going away. You know, I thought, okay, well, this 80s thing is going to go on for a couple years. About 5 years ago, I thought, I think this was maybe the height of it, but it was just sort of the resurgence of the 80s were just sort of beginning again. Well, it's got a good 6 months, maybe, you know, play a few gigs or whatever. But yeah, it's funny. I think the internet helps, and, you know, it gets more exposure everywhere. So, you know, worldwide, we're constantly increasing our fan base because people are catching on to it here and there. But,
you know, I think another reason, and you know, we're both in our 50s, and I think we start to crave what we had as kids and teenagers.
Yeah. Well, every generation has that.
Right.
Yeah.
And not only that, but we have kids now, and we are exposing them to music. And I think, you know, we become our parents, right? How do you listen to this crap, kid, that's on the radio now? this was music back in our day, right?
Yeah.
And do you find now you'll look out into a crowd and you'll see two generations, maybe three generations of fans out in the audience?
Well, I was surprised that when we played Maxwell's in Waterloo, there were some young kids there, some younger, like, college-type ages. Surprised. This one young guy even had an Images in Vogue t-shirt on. I'm like, what's going on here?
That's got to be cool to look out and see
that's cool. Yeah, it's cool. Yeah, I wish there was more of them, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Yeah.
Before we let you go, Dale, big show coming up on Sunday. And, you know, again, Ed Souza does such wonderful things for the community.
Yes, he does.
Tell our listeners and the Images in Vogue fans out there about the show and what they can expect when they come see you there. And it's more of a stripped down format, but you've got a lot of the band there, don't you?
Yeah, this one's a more stripped down format. We got Glenn and Joe on keyboards, and then we got Derek on drums. And then I think Ed's playing guitar. Not sure if Tim's playing bass or not, but it's not a full rock show with lights and everything and the whole thing, and it's more of a sit down room, like almost like a dinner theater thing. And then we talk between songs and answer questions about the history of the band and stuff. So it's fun.
You being the
more intimate,
yes,
I guess,
which must be right up the alley of an introverted guy, right?
Yeah, it's a little stressful. You know, yeah, Joe do all the talking.
Yeah, that's right. And I've heard musicians that are like that and have played at the Classic Bowl say that this is more intimidating than playing in front of 15,000 people.
Yeah, I'd rather play in a club with five people. So that's a lot easier.
Listen, Dale, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us. Have a great show, and we'll see you this weekend in Mississauga.
Okay, man. Thanks.
I'm Casey Kasem from American Top 40. And now, I'd like to introduce you to two of my best friends in the world. One is Barry Davis. The other, a very good-looking man by the name of Matt McFarland. Here are my two best friends with the opening track.
Ah, yes, the wonderful sounds of Motley Crue. And Kurt Nielsen joins us now. And thank you very much.
Hello.
Yeah, I would have been, wouldn't it? I can't imagine ever hearing Casey Kasem actually coming in off of a Motley Crue song.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. There is girls, girls, girls. Yeah. Rat Tail Jimmy was a secondhand hood. Deal at Hollywood.
Okay, so guys, you both had homework.
Yep.
And the homework was to go and watch The Dirt.
Yep.
And where the hell are you, Kurt? Are you watching it? Are you watching an indie race right now?
I'm watching The Dirt through someone's windows.
Yeah, it sounds that way.
It's almost over.
Okay, so here's the deal, guys. Two of us absolutely could not stand The Dirt, and one of us absolutely thought it was fantastic. I am in the minority.
Yeah,
I love the movie.
Yep.
So let's.
I mean, I'm so interested to hear about this. Why? How you found redeemable qualities to this?
Yeah.
Okay.
Total trash fire of a
okay
filmmaking.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Yep.
First of all, I don't compare it to the Freddie Mercury movie.
Okay.
We Will Rock You. Although,
don't
at least with this movie, The Dirt, they did not have a song that was written in the 70s actually being written in the 80s. They did not have the band being broken up when they weren't broken up.
Mm-hmm.
Those things, there was, but of course, there's going to be factual errors, right?
Yes, yep.
They did not meet Vince Neil at a backyard party, okay,
no,
in real life. But I thought that the guys that played them, were they over the top? Yes, they were over the top, but Tommy Lee was an over-the-top guy. I thought the woman playing Heather Locklear was like Heather Locklear. I thought she looked exactly like her. I thought
she did. Yeah.
I thought she nailed it. I thought that, you know, the whole story behind the band and some of the things. Yeah, I know what you guys are going to say. So why don't you guys come up with what you hated about it, and I'll come up with rebuttals, okay?
All right, Kurt, who goes first?
Kurt,
I think you, please, Matt, go ahead.
Okay.
All right.
Give me one thing you did not like about it. Constructive.
All right. I'll give you the constructive. They left out a third of the story.
Okay. Pamela Anderson should have been in the movie.
Yeah.
Or you know, the story. Because, yes.
Yeah.
Pamela Anderson being married to Tommy Lee was such a huge part. I'm dying to know why that was not in the movie.
I bet you any money what happened is Pam said, none of the stuff about me is allowed in the film.
Hmm. Kurt, that might be a possibility, huh?
If I saw any test footage from that film, I wouldn't want my name anywhere near it in any capacity. Absolutely. That's what happened.
But here's my thing with this is, though, that's Tommy Lee went to jail. And while he was in jail,
he also made a movie. He made a video on a boat.
And you know what? And listen, but that kicked off the wave of sex tapes. This is not an insignificant detail. That was the first of its kind. This was the legacy of Motley Crue continuing with one of their members being very well endowed and videotaping with conceivably...
Was she really that well endowed?
Oh, God. And she, at the time, was the most popular sex symbol on the planet.
I thought you were going to use a word that began with an H.
No. No, but she was the most popular Playboy bunny in probably history, right?
But Kurt, don't you think that what Matt said prior to that is pretty legit, that Pamela probably said, not a chance. Although Pamela Anderson had no problem acting in being in the Borat movie.
Right.
Right?
Yeah, but still. So this movie was so bad.
Okay, why,
the
Kurt?
The writing was so bad.
Yeah, the writing was horrific.
So the movie ended with them basically going like, well, we really did a lot of bad things to a lot of people, but hey, we're a rock and roll band. And I was like, what?
Have you ever met?
The thesis of the movie?
Have you ever met the guys from Motley Crue? The story is not that much
we
more.
We were really shitty dudes, but like, anyways, you're going to cheer for us right now.
You know, you just swore on the radio, Kurt. You literally, and you're. It's the third time in the last 2 days somebody has used the S word on the show.
Yeah.
I'm getting a letter.
I assumed
from
you
the
bleeped this out.
How can I bleep it out? You're live.
Oh.
We don't have a live bleeper here on the radio show, Kurt. Okay. But you're okay. If this was a story about four intellects, right? If it was a story about, you know, the group of seven and they talked about their paintings and they said, we're just a bunch of badass painters and we rocked it with our. Okay, yeah. But this was Motley Crue. These guys were stoned all the time. These guys were a bunch of kids, really. That's how they talked. That's how they acted. That was their thing.
Okay, but if we're going to take the movie itself, all right? The pacing was way too quick. They glossed over.
It's a movie. You have 2 hours to get in.
No, they had unlimited amount of time. It's Netflix. But they can go as long as they want to go.
Matt, it has nothing. Why do you think movies are no more than 2 hours for the most part? Because people's attention spans are. Well, sorry, what was I saying?
Oh, God. But the point is that they could have gone slower in spots. For instance, the glossing over of the fact that the Dr. Feelgood album was a complete change in how they did everything. First, they were sober.
But you see, you're talking about this as a musician. People that are watching, people that are not full, like, again, and you've mentioned this before about how wanting to change the rules of baseball to make it faster. They're not doing it for the hardcore baseball fans. They're doing it to bring in new fans. And I think if you're a hardcore Motley Crue fan, you're going to watch this movie.
Right. And right? And listen,
and you're going to hate this movie because there's a book.
I didn't hate it. And I read
that
the book.
That is so much better. There's a book.
Of course
book
it is.
So much better.
Yeah,
it is.
And you know
way
what?
Better.
And
by,
you know what?
Yeah.
The many Stephen King books are much better than the movies. So you have to take it for what it is. Did you guys actually go in to watch this movie, think that expecting it to be like a Farley Brothers or Academy Award winning movie?
No, I expected it to.
No, but it was laughable. Like
it was
the
bad.
Character, the daughter character, where she's just like every single expositional line of dialogue she has is like, Daddy, why does bad things happen? It's like
saying
from the movie.
Hey, Skylar died in that movie. To me, that was the part of the movie that was very hard for me to watch. And anyone who's a parent, that was gut-wrenching. And I almost wish that they didn't take that much screen time on that storyline. And I know you have to include it because it was a big part of what happened to Vince Neil.
Yeah, it was a big part. But, just like but the friggin' Pamela Anderson storyline that was completely avoided.
But there was a little bit too much buildup of that. Yeah. But I thought the guys that played the Motley Crue guys, were they the greatest actors in the world? No. But I thought look-wise, I thought they kind of had it. I thought that, you know, the guy doing Tommy Lee had all the mannerisms. I thought that there's a seagull. There's literally a seagull in the background. Are you listening to a Solitude CD while we talk?
Look, man, live on the beach, okay, dude?
This is insane. Yeah, you sound like somebody that's in the movie as well.
Kurt, honestly, man, where are you, man?
Okay, so... Well, I had to leave a gig to come and record this, so I'm like outside near Hyde Park.
Where there's seagulls.
Seagull season, yeah.
Oh, there you go. Okay, what did you think about the guy doing Vince Neil and his singing? If it was the same actor.
Part? Is that what you said?
Yeah, the singing.
The singing was okay. Yeah. The stuff about him as a character was okay. I thought the like fake facial hair when he was going through a rough time and that actor clearly couldn't grow a beard to save his life, and that fake beard really took me out of the moment. I gotta say,
I know there were a couple of guys that were, at least two of them were British.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah
so they can't grow beards, is that what you're saying?
No.
British people can't.
Well, the other thing too is the Nikki Sixx character, literally all he did the entire film was just sulk. Just like, yeah, it was completely one dimensional.
But how
it
do you know? How do you know Nikki Sixx wasn't like that? Because remember, the guys in the band were overseeing this movie,
right?
So they all had a say in it. They all looked at it and said, "Yep, this is exactly how we want to be portrayed
because,
in this movie."
But I have seen interviews with Nikki Sixx,
yeah,
and it's not sulking all the time.
But
he
did
literally
you,
did that
did
the
you
whole
see,
film,
yeah, because his character was stoned the whole film.
Well. Anyway, right. Yeah, it just, to me, it was not, I wanted to see the book on yep. film, and it was not that.
Why would you expect that?
Because they
because it's based on the book.
Right, based on the book. And also, keep in mind, at the very beginning of the movie, they did not say, this is a true reflection of a real life story. This said, it is based on a true story.
Yeah, that's true.
Right, so that right off the get-go gives them the permission to fudge around with history, right?
Listen, it's their story. I get it. But that book, for our listeners that haven't read it, that book is so good.
Yeah.
It's
great.
It is so good that this thing was in developmental hell for like 7 years. They could have taken the time and gone, okay, wait a second. Let's make sure that this thing is as close to humanly possible. And listen, good on Netflix for allowing some of the footage because there was a lot of nudity and there was the opening scene, the very opening scene in the book, that makes it in. But there was...
Yeah, but that wasn't the beginning of the movie. You said you thought the opening scene in the movie was going to be what is exactly out the beginning of the book.
Well, yeah, but there was a slight twist to it. But the point is that they even the comeback at the end of The Dirt, which doesn't involve Pamela Anderson, but them getting back together and getting back on the horse, that was omitted. It was just this.
Did we see it? Any of the singer that did that came in for Vince and did an album with him? Did we
yeah.
see?
Yeah, but he apparently lost the ability to speak.
Yeah, he did not have a line in that movie.
There was no line. It was just stand there and have curly hair and then stand there some more.
What did you guys think of the guy playing Mick Mars? Because again, Mick Mars was one of those really bizarre, and he is one of those very bizarre guys. Oh, they also did have the timing of his surgery wrong.
Yeah.
Because they
it was much later than that.
It was much later than that. Yeah.
Yeah.
But what
I liked the Mick Mars character because he was kind of seemed like the only grounded character.
Yeah.
Well, he was in real life.
Yeah. So well that was well done, you know.
Yeah.
I'll give credit there.
I just like how much of a curmudgeon he was. Literally, literally, he was him. He was a really moody guy. Yeah, him
very
and Nikki.
Very believable in the music industry.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you guys think that the Tommy Lee character was too over the top?
No.
No.
Because Tommy was over the top, and I know people that have said to me, "Yeah, the guy doing Tommy Lee, he was just too much." But that's Tommy Lee. That Tommy Lee is too much.
Oh, totally. Totally.
I think it was maybe a little one-dimensional in that regard. Like,
as opposed to the multi-dimensional real Tommy Lee?
Well, I think there's a little more heart there than was portrayed.
Okay, so Matt says that he wanted to see Pamela Anderson. He wanted to see that storyline in the movie.
Yep.
Was there, Kurt, a storyline in the real history of Motley Crue that you would have liked to have seen in the movie?
I would have liked to have seen more Ozzy Osbourne because I want to give credit to that. I thought that scene was good. I thought that dude did a really good job as Ozzy Osbourne. And I was like, we only get one scene of him by the pool, but they're on like their first major tour with this guy and kind of like learning from Ozzy. I would have liked to see more of that.
Hey, I want to say to you guys too, because we have all read in The Dirt the story about Ozzy Osbourne and we saw it in the movie where he snorts the ants, okay?
That's great.
There is some talk out there that may never have happened. Ozzy Osbourne, first of all, has never admitted to doing that, number one. Number two.
Like he would know.
Well, but the other thing is.
He doesn't remember yesterday. Well,
the other thing is the guys in Motley Crue were so stoned out of
Jacked
their heads
out,
at the
yeah.
time
yeah.
that he may have been sipping a drink. And they all thought, oh, my God, this guy's snorting ants, man. This is the coolest thing in the world.
You know what? If they fabricated it, so be it. It's literally one of the greatest rock stories ever.
I will admit, the guy playing Ozzy was fantastic.
He nailed it, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that was probably the best scene in the movie, really.
What character did you think was the biggest embarrassment to you? Which of the characters in the movie did you say, oh, my God, this is stupid? Why is this person...
Who, Kurt?
I don't want to seem like a monster, but that like the child
really,
dying character.
Why? Because she talked like this. Maybe she talked like this.
It should have been handled better than that. Like, I'm not saying, like, obviously happened. It's a very sensitive.
But they were tugging at your heartstrings. That's why they had the little girl talk like that.
It was so poorly written. It was just like, this is not how human beings talk. And this is a very human sensitive moment. And it felt like a real, like, come on.
Yeah, I got you.
I honestly thought they were like, well, we've got a book, so why would we pay a screenwriter, you know?
Well, I will admit, like I said, the whole story with Vince Neil and his daughter was disturbing, I found, to me. Well, Matthew, if there was a character in the movie that you could have done without, or at least the performance of the character.
Oh, easy. Nikki Six.
Really?
Oh, yeah. The whole time I just wanted to reach to the screen and just punch him in the face. Be like, bro, do you have a smile ever? Or, like, are you enjoying any of this stuff that you're friggin' doing?
Because how did you guys... Sorry, I interrupted you.
But the whole time, the entire film, he's the least likable human ever. Like, I wouldn't want to be in his band. Screw you, man. Like, you know?
What did you guys think of when they would literally break character and talk into the camera?
I love the fourth wall break.
Yeah?
I thought that was great, too, actually, because it is a cool reference to the book, which, again, is so much better.
Yeah. And there was... okay, their manager, their...
Doc McGee,
very famous. Now, that wasn't how they met him. They didn't meet him at a party like that.
No.
But the fact that his assistant wasn't going to be in the movie, like, basically the character got cut, but they had to bring it up that he's not going to be in the movie.
Yeah.
So I liked that. I thought that was kind of cool.
You know what's funny? I liked the guy that played Doc McGee.
I love that actor.
Yeah.
He's from Breaking Bad. He was fantastic. What a great choice.
Who is he in Breaking Bad?
He was Gale. He was
the assistant.
The assistant.
Oh, yeah.
And he was one of those guys. Like, he walked... Actually, if there was a well-written character, he would be it, because he walked the line of slimy as well as...
Caring. Good,
caring. He walked that line super well. There was a number of times where they show him in his hotel room and Motley Crue come bursting through the door, and he says stuff like, "What are you idiots up to now?"
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, on another note, he was not fired for bringing Nikki Sixx's mom to a show.
No.
That's not true either.
No. No, but there was... Go ahead.
No, that was, you know, done for theatrical reasons, and I was cool with that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, totally.
There were a lot of facts that were wrong. Okay, the final words on all three of you. Out of 10.
Oh, boy.
Oh.
How many stars?
I want that time back, man. Was it 2 hours? I want those 2 hours
back.
Wow.
So how many stars?
Zero.
Negative. Seriously.
Negative. Wow.
The worst movie you've ever seen. Now, is it because of your expectations were so high?
It's just this, the writing and the fact that, like, the payoff for the movie was them going, like, we were real bleeping bleeps to a whole bunch of people, but anyways, who we're gonna go rock?
Okay,
and I was like, what? No.
Okay, we've got a zero from Kurt. Matt,
oh man, like a four?
A four. I was gonna give it a six.
Yeah, there we go. Well, if you add it all up, you almost get a good score.
Well,
it's
10 out of 30.
But, dudes, Kurt, you're zero.
Zero.
Really sewers the whole thing, man, as far as...
All right, Kurt, next week, hopefully we'll talk about something that you like. We're going to do a whole show on bass guitars.
Let's talk about The Song Remains the Same as a live video.
Oh, hated it.
Oh, my God.
Talk to you next week, Kurt.
Thanks.
Okay, bye, guys.